Hello, welcome to the Saturn edition of your local talking newspaper, covering St Albans and the surrounding district. This edition is for the week ending November the 9th, 2019. I'm Michael, one of your readers for tonight, and I'm joined in the studio by Joan, Claire and Roy. The piece of music you've just heard is called Dark Dream, and we'll play all of it at the end of this recording. As usual, our thanks go to Goffby, who composed the music and has given us permission to use it. All the news items in this recording have been taken from the Hearts Advertiser, and we will finish with a summary of the radio programmes we think you might enjoy over the next week. Before the first news item, we have a couple of announcements to make. A couple of weeks ago, Steve mentioned the fact that our programmes can now be heard on a mobile phone or tablet, as well as on the memory stick, which we will continue to send to you, and also on our own website. We are interested to know how many of our listeners are able to access the various new technological options, and also to find out how many of our listeners have used the free advisory service offered by the local charity, Computer Friendly. If you've had help from one of these special courses run by Computer Friendly, please could you let us know? Thanks. Now the second is in last week's preview of events by Peter Burley. He mentioned the Soup and Carols event at St Nicholas Church in Harpenden. Here's a reminder. St Nicholas Church on the Green in Harpenden, Soup and Carols on Fridays, 29th of November and 6th, 13th and 20th of December from 1 o'clock to 1:30 p.m. Sing a few carols, hear a few readings and enjoy some soup as we celebrate the season and prepare for Christmas. Now, here is Joan with the first news item.
Hello, I'm Joan. Family's trauma after ceiling collapses in flat. Amina Khan has lived at Ellis House on Charrington Place since it was new 10 years ago, with Hightown Housing Association acting as landlord throughout this period. On September the 30th, the mum of two heard a huge thud before the ceiling fell into her open-plan lounge and kitchen. She immediately reported the incident to Hightown Housing Association, but despite several calls, emails and a GP's letter of advice to the landlord, the problem has still not been fixed. The management company, First Port, and the Housing Association remain at loggerheads over who has the responsibility to provide alternative accommodation in the interim. Amina said, "I'm absolutely frustrated and outraged that this matter has been passed back and forth from Hightown to First Port. I've been emptying bowls of water for weeks now. My main concern is the priority of my husband and my children's health. There is mould so bad that my GP has written to the Housing Association to tell them the property condition is likely to result in increased frequency of exacerbations and possible hospital admission." She added, "How could I afford to go to a hotel? How would I feed my family? My husband's insulin needs to stay in a fridge." Amina's husband, Faisal, has COPD and other serious conditions, and their daughter, Amelia, has chronic asthma. A spokesperson for Hightown Housing Association said, "The managing agent is responsible for repairs to the building, and we have been regularly contacting them for updates on when they will repair the leak in the roof, which would then allow the insurance company to arrange for the ceiling to be fixed. We are told that the delay has been due to the managing agent's contractor waiting for parts to arrive, but that repairs should start this week. We understand how frustrating this has been, and our estates inspector has been visiting regularly to check that the property is safe. We explained to the resident that she can ask the insurance company for alternative accommodation in a hotel if they wish to move out until the repairs are completed, but this option has not been taken up. However, a spokesperson for Managing Association First Port said, "We are sorry about the delay in being able to fix the leak at Ms. Khan's property. We appointed a specialist contractor as soon as we were made aware of the leak, and they immediately put in place a temporary repair, which may have been impacted by the recent heavy rainfall. The longer-term solution does require a specialist part, which has caused the delay. We are now working with the contractor to make sure that the leak is fixed as soon as possible. This is an absolute priority, but the contractor has flagged that their ability to complete the fix is weather dependent.
Hello, I'm Claire. Rise in knife crime for Hearts reflects national trend. Sentences for crimes involving a knife or offensive weapon in Hertfordshire have been rising over the past 5 years, according to statistics released by the Ministry of Justice. This rise is broadly in line with the national trend of steadily increasing knife crime since 2014. A long-term look at countrywide sentences for knife crime shows that these offences declined steadily for 6 years from the year ending June 2009, when 750 people were sentenced, to the year ending June 2014, when 415 people were sentenced. From July 2014 to June 2019, the number of sentences passed for these crimes rose back to their 2009-10 levels, where related sentences reached 708 in 2017, 539 in 2016, and 650 in 2019. Reflecting on the figures, Hertfordshire Police and Crime Commissioner David Lloyd said, "I recognise that knife crime and serious violence is of great concern to residents. There have been rises here and nationally, but Hertfordshire remains a very safe place to live. It has risen from a very low number to a low number." The nationwide trend in increasing knife crime from 2014 onwards could be linked to the national rules on police stop and search powers introduced that year by the then Home Secretary, Theresa May. Under those rules, police powers to carry out stop and search operations were limited. In March 2019, those guidelines were relaxed by Sajid Javid as a response to the increasing trend in rising knife crime, in a move welcomed by the police. Mr. Lloyd said, "I am fully supportive of the police stop and search powers and targeted operations. A rise in sentencing shows those carrying knives and bladed articles are being caught and put before the courts." In addition to welcoming changes to the stop and search powers nationally, the police commissioner has allocated additional local funding to tackling knife crime in schools. He added, "This year I have increased funding to extend a pilot project against the whole county. A grant of £280,000 will pay for more youth project workers to identify those at risk. The newly formed Children and Young Persons Gangs and Schools team, based in Stevenage, is also being expanded to cover the whole county. Hearts Police have published advice and information to help prevent knife and gun crime. Search knife and gun crime on hearts.police.uk to find out more."
Hello, this is Roy. My first article is entitled "Railway Station Bike Thief Jailed for Multiple Offences." A prolific thief has been jailed and ordered to pay thousands in fines for stealing more than a dozen bikes from St Albans and Harpenden railway stations. Samuel Boateng, 40, pleaded guilty to 18 counts of theft from St Albans City and Harpenden stations, the first of which happened in February this year. Police officers dedicated to tackling bicycle thefts in the area caught Boateng red-handed stealing a bike from St Albans City station and arrested him. The stolen bike was recovered, and Boateng was also found to be carrying an angle grinder and a broken bike lock. The officer investigating the case gathered witness statements from victims and evidence from the station owners to ensure that Boateng, who is of no fixed address, was convicted of each theft. Appearing in Hatfield Magistrates Court for sentencing on October the 29th, Boateng was jailed for a year and fined £4,500. Inspector Gary Pinner of the British Transport Police, BTP, said, "This is a fantastic example of officers showing their diligence and tenacity in bringing a prolific offender to justice. Our officers have been building a file against Boateng for a considerable period, and I hope that this sentence serves as a deterrent to would-be bike thieves. They should be aware that the BTP and the courts will seek prison sentences." Nationally, the BTP has seen a reduction of 18% in recorded bicycle thefts. And there has been a reduction of 22% in bicycle thefts at St Albans and surrounding stations. Our officers will continue to work alongside train operators to reduce bicycle crime at stations and investigate new ways to keep passengers' belongings safe. The two stations are managed by Govia Thames Link Railway, with the operator's North Thames Link Rail Enforcement Manager, Adam Deer, welcoming the news. He said, "We welcome the conviction of a prolific bicycle thief who targeted two of our very busy commuter stations. We work closely with the British Transport Police to reduce cycle crime, and we are also in the process of improving cycle security at both stations. Figures released in August revealed that there have been more bike thefts in St Albans station than at any other station in the UK."
Hello. This is entitled "Carer Publishes Book About Flood After Husband's Death." And there's a lovely picture of the author, Susie Clark, at the head of the article. A carer from St Albans has published her first book after being inspired by the flooding of her house. Butterflies and Baked Beans is a fictional story based on Susie Clark's own life experiences. Susie, who has lived and worked in St Albans for 13 years, gave up a high-powered job at a local charity to look after her father. The 67-year-old describes her adventures as funny and poignant as she adapts to being a carer, having a lodger, and finding out that being 60-something is not the end of the world after all. She said her book is about floods, hurricanes, and a dad who won't come out from under the bed, adding it raises issues about being at retirement age but unable to afford to retire. It's a book for anyone who wonders how they're going to cope with the fast pace of technological change that leaves you not just individuals but entire generations behind. Susie hopes that others will be inspired to write and publish the book they have always dreamed of writing. She said, "I hope that my books will entertain as well as being thought-provoking. Like Robert Frost, I aim to begin in delight and end in wisdom." The cover is illustrated by local cartoonist and animator Phil Little. Susie said, "I described the main character, Suki, in Butterflies and Baked Beans to Phil, and he came back with a cover drawing who looked like Les Dawson in drag. I told him he needed to make her look a lot sexier because she has lots of adventures with men that she's met on the internet. She's already started on the sequel, Honeybees and Heartburn, at the urging of her partner, who died of esophageal cancer in July this year, while she was writing the final chapter of Butterflies and Baked Beans. Sadly, I lost my dear partner Jenny in July. It has made me more determined to publish my second book, which I've just started writing. It's going to broach the sensitive subject of esophageal or heartburn cancer, but in a humorous way, if that is possible. It's the sixth most common cause of cancer death in the UK, affecting mainly white males in midlife. But to make that possible, I need the first book to attract a hefty audience. Butterflies and Baked Beans is out on November the 30th and available through Amazon."
A Harpenden photographer has been awarded a prestigious accolade by the Royal Photographic Society. Steve Collins received the licentiate distinction known as LRPS after a panel of the Society's qualified senior members assessed 10 of his printed and mounted images. In front of a chairperson, five judges, and an audience of other RPS members, panels are brought out anonymously and displayed prior to assessment. The judges, who decide whether or not to recommend the member to the Distinctions Board of the LRPS Award, take into account the structure and balance of the panel as a whole. The judges then examine each individual image in the panel, deciding whether or not they are up to the required standard. If a member is successful, the chairperson announces his or her name, which is then put forward to the Distinctions Board for confirmation. Steve created a panel that mixed different photographic styles and genres, including macro, street and landscape work, and presented images in colour and monochrome. 3 of the 10 images were taken around Harpenden, including 2 images of Rothamsted Park, both of which have previously won places in the calendars produced by the Harts Ads sister publication, Hertfordshire Life magazine. Steve said, "I am delighted to achieve this distinction and that such an auspicious body as the Royal Photographic Society has recognised the quality of my photography." The assessment day was quite a tense and nerve-wracking experience, so I'm thrilled that my panel was ultimately successful. The Royal Photographic Society is the UK's leading photography organisation, with a distinguished heritage and a mission to promote and encourage the highest standards of photography. Associate of the RPS and Fellowship of the RPS are also awards that are presented to the top avid photographers in the society.
Cathedral visitors take epic journey through space. Over 20,000 people travelled to the stars and back as part of St Albans Cathedral's spectacular Sonne Lumière space voyage. Produced by artistic collaboration Lux Morales in recognition of the 50th anniversary of the Apollo moon landings and Neil Armstrong's landmark steps, the stunning installation saw the facade of the cathedral transformed into a visual journey to the edge of the Milky Way and beyond. Lux Morales' artistic director, Peter Walker, explained, "It has been wonderful to see so many people of all ages come to see art in the cathedral and embrace the journey to the edge of the universe and back. It has been especially moving to see people playing on the moon and staring back at the image of the Earth revolving." Space Voyage is not just a light show, it's an installation of Sonne Lumière outside and multiple films, artworks, light and sound installations inside that together create an abstract journey around the interior of St Albans Cathedral, reanimating vast areas of the magnificent architecture. The Dean of St Albans, the Very Reverend Dr Geoffrey John, said, "Cathedrals were built to give people a sense of awe and transcendence. So the cathedral is a perfect place for an installation like Space Voyage, which created such a vivid awareness of the mysterious vastness and overwhelming beauty of the universe." As well as the Space Voyage Sonne Lumière, the cathedral hosted a range of space-themed events throughout the week. Hundreds attended a special Mass on the Moon to launch Space Voyage and were invited to stand on a mocked-up surface of the satellite and receive Holy Communion, just as Buzz Aldrin did in the lunar module before taking those first historic steps. Other events included a cosmic organ recital, Play Among the Stars, with music from famous sci-fi movies. Daleks invaded the cathedral with a talk on Doctor Who. The learning team explored the themes of science and religion and the search for habitable planets at a series of talks, and hundreds of children explored the cathedral on a special space-themed trail to the Trinity and beyond. Space Voyage follows on from the huge success of last year's Poppy Fields installation by Lux Morales at St Albans Cathedral. The installation artwork transformed the sacred space of the cathedral with sound and light artworks, sculpture and poetry.
Adult respite services closures raise concerns at County Hall. Concerns have been raised at proposals to close a number of short break centres for adults with disabilities in Hertfordshire. The short break centres offer adults with disabilities a break from their daily routine and the opportunity to learn new skills, as well as giving respite to those who care for them. Currently, Herts County Council offers respite services at 8 centres across Herts, but the authority is now looking at proposals to close 3, Hicksbury Lane in St Albans, Isabel Court in Hoddesdon and Tewin Road in Hemel Hempstead, which provide a total of 13 respite places. Although the plans are at an early consultation stage, Labour councillors Nigel Bell and Sharon Taylor have raised the issue amid fears that carers will have to travel up to 15 miles. At a meeting of the County Council's Performance and Resources Cabinet Panel on Thursday, October the 24th, Councillor Taylor pointed to a number of Stevenage residents who rely on the respite service and said it was important not to disrupt a service that was incredibly valuable. She said, This can have such a profound impact on people's lives. I wouldn't want us to take steps towards that without more consideration. We shouldn't be extending people's travel distances unless we have thought very hard about how we're going to do that sustainably. According to the County Council, the existing short break services are underused, with some centres less than half full during 2018-19. Whether the centres are used or not, the County Council still has to meet their costs, and closure could free up £900,000 a year to be used elsewhere. The consultation of the proposals is currently ongoing, but will end today, Thursday, November the 7th. Councillor Richard Roberts, Executive Member for Adult Care and Health, said, "The proposed changes would allow us to stop spending money on underutilised services. I'd urge anyone currently using or planning to use these services in the future to provide their feedback so councillors can review this and make an informed choice when the decision comes to panel in December."
And this article is entitled Sports Kit, and there's a photograph of some St. Columba's pupils in Zambia with the team that they've given the sports kit to. A school has been to Zambia to give out sports kits to children. St. Columba's College, with the help of KitAid and Watford Football Club, delivered football kits to students at St. Francis School in Zambia. Each year, sixth form students and staff of the independent school undertake the Project Respond programme that was inaugurated in 1991 to meet the needs of young people in Zambia. Alongside delivering the football kit, staff and students also renovated the school's dining room before continuing their project to support the Labuto Childcare Centre in Kwabwe, where they helped to look after orphans. Teacher Ilse DeVos said, "We're very grateful to KitAid for the generous donation of football kit for Zambian children, who were delighted with the amazing donation."
A woman celebrated her 100th birthday in St Albans. Mary Booth had a party with family and friends at the Ardmore Hotel to celebrate the last century on Wednesday, October the 23rd. She was born in Sheffield, has lived in St Albans for nearly 60 years, and enjoys socialising with friends, as well as being an accomplished pianist. During the war, she worked on wiring up fighter planes and tanks. She survived the Blitz and a direct hit on her house by a firebomb, which failed to explode. Mary was married for 72 years to Raymond and also has two sons, four grandchildren and four great-grandchildren. One of her daughters, Nicolan, made a butterfly-themed cake. Her son Chris said, "Mum attributes her longevity to determination and a marvellous sense of humour. She is an inspiration to everyone. It was great that so many people came to her party." There's a wonderful picture of Mary surrounded by 11 members of her family.
Volunteers are planting 2,000 bulbs to brighten up grass verges at Marshallswick Quadrant in St Albans. Carol Chalkley, who lives in Barnfield Road, started planting flowers underneath the road sign with her neighbour earlier this year. They eventually extended the planting all the way down the road, which drew the attention of John Hale, County Councillor for Coney Heath and Marshallswick. Carol, who has lived in St Albans for 40 years and in Marshallswick for 12 years, said, "John Hale said he loved the flowers and I said I'd love to get my hands on areas around the quadrant shops. He said it was an excellent idea and got planning permission." Around 12 volunteers will help plant a mixture of daffodils and crocuses from 10 a.m. on Tuesday, November 12th. The bulbs were purchased by the Parish Council with the help of a grant from Hearts County Council.
Bonfire Night. The magnificent St Albans Cathedral Fireworks Spectacular was held over the weekend, with thousands of people attending despite the wet weather. The fireworks display was held in Verulamium Park on Saturday, and the money raised was divided between the Hospice of St Francis and Youth Talk St Albans. In the 25 years the display has been running, it has raised more than £750,000 for local charities. The Reverend Abby Thompson, the sub-dean of St Albans Cathedral, said, "The fireworks were magnificent despite the rain. and it was great to be able to facilitate such a wonderful event for all ages once again. Most important of all is the opportunity to support local charities working so tirelessly with members of our community. The event was sponsored by solicitors Debenhams Ottaway and supported by volunteers from St Albans District Explorer Scouts, and the article is accompanied by a picture of brightly coloured fireworks lighting up the night sky over Verulamium Park.
And this is entitled Commuters Facing Real Hardship Due to Reduced Trains, and it's accompanied by a picture of commuters at Harpenden standing on the platform with no train in sight. Harpenden passengers will be left in the lurch after Govia Thameslink Railway, GTR, refused to allow more trains to stop at the station. Group leaders at St Albans District Council have written in protest at GTR's decision to stick to their existing timetable until December 2020, warning that this will cause considerable frustration and real hardship for passengers. GTR carried out a public consultation following complaints that not enough trains were stopping at Harpenden at peak times under a new timetable which was introduced last year. However, following the consultation, they've announced that services through Harpenden will not be increased. In a letter to Tim Moran, Managing Director of Thameslink and Great Northern, the group leaders said they were very disappointed with the company's decision. They wrote, "Every day we receive reports from our constituents of overcrowded trains and late-running services. Your decision will cause considerable frustration for the large number of Harpenden residents who use your service for the daily commute. Data shows that Luton Station has 29% more trains at peak morning times than Harpenden, but 31% fewer passengers." The group leader added, "Harpenden commuters have reported waiting for overcrowded slow trains as half-empty fast trains run without stopping at the station. We hope that you will work to resolve this issue with the needs of Harpenden rail users in mind." The letter was signed by Council Leader and Lib Dem Group Leader Councillor Chris White, Conservative Group Leader Councillor Mary Maynard, Labour Group Councillor Leader Councillor Malachi Pakenham, and Green and Independent Group Leader Councillor Simon Grover. Emily Ketchin of Harpenden Thameslink Commuters Group said, "Thameslink slashed a third of key Harpenden services without any consultation. They seem to care more about their loss of face if they admit their mistake than do about the people who are forced to use their service to get to work." At the start of the consultation, Tom Moran had said Thameslink wanted to ask passengers what impact any such change would have on them before taking any action.
Campaigners for a new hospital central to St Albans, Watford and Dacorum are making a final plea for donations to fund their legal challenge against local NHS buses. The new hospital campaign applied for a judicial review after Hearts Valley Clinical Commissioning Group and West Hertfordshire Hospitals Trust stated their preferred option to renovate existing hospital sites at St Albans City, Hemel Hempstead and Watford General. Campaigners have argued the Watford site in Vicarage Road is inaccessible and the community would be better served by a new hospital in a central location. The Hospitals Trust and the CCG ruled out building a new hospital after being given £350 million spending limit. The bulk of the money will be spent on renovating Watford General, with smaller improvements made at the other two hospitals. A High Court judge approved the NHC's application, which means the case can now go forward for a full hearing. The campaigners are seeking to raise £20,000 to fund the legal challenge and have so far raised more than £14,300, more than half of which have been raised through their crowdfunding site. Campaigner Ron Glatter said, "This is very encouraging and we're immensely grateful to all the members of the public who have generously supported our appeal. We are thrilled by the response of the public in West Hertfordshire so far, but know we must reach our target and would urge residents and organisations to help us to do so. It is vital that we have state-of-the-art 21st century hospital provision in this area on a clear, accessible site. This option has been dismissed by the local health bodies without being given full and fair consideration through public consultation, so the whole process has had no credibility. The campaigners have pointed to other schemes which were promised similar funding by the government, such as the Princess Alexandra Hospital Trust in Harlow, and which are promoting a new hospital as a serious option.
Around £100,000 is to be spent by County Hall to investigate whether residents are recycling properly by checking the contents of their bins. As part of a waste compositional analysis, teams will scrutinise bins from a number of residents across the different districts, including Hartsmere, North Harts, St Albans, Stevenage and Welland Hatfield. On Monday, November 4th, Hertfordshire Waste Partnership backed plans to look at residual waste bins, which is the non-recyclable waste that is typically destined for landfill or incineration. This would also include dry recyclables, such as cans, plastic and glass, where two or more are collected together. The analysis will also look at the split between food and garden waste too, in boroughs and districts that collect this type of waste. And the results will give a breakdown of the contents of bins, identifying what residents are throwing away and whether items are being put in the right bins. The findings, according to the report to the partnership, will also provide the councils with information about the amount of packaging that's thrown away and form part of the government's plan to introduce an extended producer responsibility regime. The project will go out to tender later this year, with the analysis expected to occur between February and April 2020. A similar analysis of bins in Hertfordshire was conducted in 2015 that showed households were putting out an average of 6.1 kilogram of residual household waste a week. It found that on average, 15.4% of that, equivalent to 0.94 kilograms, could have been placed in the dry recycling bin, and 35.8%, the equivalent of 3.12 kilograms, could have been placed in organic recycling containers. It also found that 78% of residents put out dry recycling containers for collection, with an average 3.65 kilogram per household. 8% of that was classed as contamination, including items such as non-recyclable plastic, general residual waste, and unacceptable paper and card. During the last survey, 52% of residents put out organic bins for collection. 20% of the waste in these bins was classed as contamination, largely due to the inclusion of soil and turf and scrap wood.
Luton Airport expansion is a recipe for environmental disaster, claim campaigners and local politicians. Campaigners and councillors have criticised plans to expand Luton Airport, arguing that not enough has been done to mitigate the impact on people living below flight paths. Last month, London Luton Airport Limited, LLAL, started its latest consultation into its expansion proposals, which will involve building a second terminal, new airport infrastructure, and increasing passenger numbers from a projected 18 million per annum by 2020 to 32 million by 2039. Luton Borough Council leader Hazel Simmons wrote to Councillor Chris White, the leader of St Albans District Council, detailing the positive economic impact the expansion would have on St Albans. She wrote, "In earlier communications, we have outlined LLAL's absolute commitment to minimising and mitigating environmental impacts within surrounding communities, and measures to tackle these are outlined in our consultation documentation. However, St Albans District Councillor Annie Brewster questioned how these measures will be enforced. She suggested the council should request another letter from Councillor Simmons explaining how LLAL can guarantee quieter planes, increase use of public transport to get to the airport, and to minimise harmful emissions. Andrew Lamborn from Ladakan, Luton and District Association for the Control of Aircraft Noise, said, "It's questionable enough that Luton Borough Council has sent such an unbalanced letter during a consultation period. It also beggars belief that LLAL knows anything about mitigating environmental impacts. It is absolutely outrageous to try to sugarcoat what is effectively a recipe for environmental disaster without giving any concrete detail of how the climate change, noise and pollution impacts and surface transport overload would be mitigated. The reason for this oversight seems obvious, because they do not know. There is only one reason Luton Borough Council wants more aircraft expansion: to make more money at the expense of the environment and quality of life for us all." Meanwhile, members of campaign group Harpen and Sky argued that the carbon emission growth from increasing the number of flights is in opposition to Luton Borough Council's aim to become carbon neutral by 2050. Anne Main, the Conservative parliamentary candidate for St Albans, has written to Luton Airport's parent company highlighting the breach of trust between the airport and neighbouring communities. She wrote, "Primarily, I object to this plan based on the increased noise impact it will have on those in St Albans who live under the flight paths. I've also seen almost no effort by the airport to take seriously the concerns of residents whose lives have been enormously impacted by the persistent and unrelenting noise from overflying, particularly under the RNAV flight path. The RNAV navigation system was introduced in 2015 and is believed by campaign groups to have exacerbated the problem by concentrating the noise over a smaller area." Mrs. Main added, "I'm also seriously concerned about the impact this expansion will have on our already congested road and rail links, and I've not been satisfied with the assurances given so far." LLAL Programme Delivery Director Kieran Scanlon said, "In St Albans, expansion to 32 million passengers per year is expected to generate 300 new jobs and a £10 million economic uplift. We're also proposing a new fund that would provide additional support up to £7.5 million a year for communities outside Luton for impact reduction schemes. In order to minimise the possibility of increased traffic congestion, our target is to achieve 45% public transport access by passengers and 54% by airport staff by 2029. There'd also be improvements to the highway infrastructure in and around the airport. We're committed to minimising and mitigating environmental impacts, and further measures to tackle these are outlined in our statutory consultation at futureluton.llal.org.uk. We would urge all stakeholders with an interest in the airport to attend one of our 34 consultation events, including St Albans Jubilee Centre, from 2 to 8pm on Friday, November the 29th, and provide their feedback by December the 16th.
Here are the names of people who've recently died, as published in this week's Hearts Advertiser: David Michael Bunny, aged 63, Peter Troy, aged 86, Olive Howard, aged 87, Julia Eve Cardi, aged 74, Ross McBeath, no age given, and Michael O'Meara, no age given. May they rest in peace. And my story is amputees' award after world record-breaking row success. A world record-breaking rower with a disability has won a prestigious royal award. Jordan Beecher has gained his Prince of Wales Award for his achievement. St Albans Army veteran George Beecher, 28, and fellow teammate John Armstrong, 31, crossed the finish line of the 3,000-mile rowing race from La Gomera to Antigua in just 37 days, 3 days faster than the former world record. Each year, the Ulysses Trust presents the award for the best expeditions it has supported in the previous year. These awards highlight the very best in leadership challenge, courage and planning. Winners receive a unique certificate signed by the Ulysses Trust patron, His Royal Highness the Prince of Wales. The Chairman of Trustees for the National Charity, Hertfordshire President Air Vice Marshal Nick Kurth, said, "Our Prince of Wales Annual Expedition Awards reflect a very high standard of national expedition achievement. The presentation of a commendation to Jordan acknowledges a terrific outcome, a world record in very difficult circumstances, and not forgetting he is an amputee. Jordan is a great example as an adult instructor in the Army Cadet Force. It was a delight to assist the Lord Lieutenant of Oxfordshire with presenting the commendation to Jordan. At the time, Michelle Irving, Jordan's mum, said, 'It's brilliant. It hasn't really sunk in yet. It's all a bit surreal. It's just amazing. And he looked so well when he came off the boat, even though he'd been through all the trauma.' She said Jordan was wobbly and tired when they sailed into harbour, but otherwise looked fantastic. The duo, Team Titan, won the pair's entry of the grueling Talisker Whiskey Atlantic Challenge, with only three legs between them, against eight other teams of able-bodied people. In 2012, Jordan was on his third deployment in Afghanistan when he stepped on an improvised exploding device, which blew off his leg 12 centimetres below the knee. Although the former Marlborough school pupil had to leave his vocation in the parachute regiment, he since won four Invictus Games gold medals, trained with the GB rowing team and competed in the Henley Royal Regatta.
St Albans and Harpenden schools took part in a Zero Poverty Youth Forum to talk about the importance of student activism. The forum was held at Beaumont School and delivered by Beaumont and Sir John Law's School in Harpenden. Pupils from St Albans Girls' School and Sandringham School also attended, and the day opened with a presentation by John McLaverty, the Education and Youth Coordinator for Oxfam GB. The Beaumont and Sir John Law's pupils led workshops on global inequality, the link between poverty and climate change, and how to solve poverty in the local area. In the afternoon, Beaumont Year 13 government and politics student Finlay Craigmile hosted a question time style debate with Mr. McLaverty, Liberal Democrat parliamentary spokesperson Daisy Cooper, and Peter Cashman from Christian Aid.
The district is getting ready to remember those fallen and injured in the two world wars and other past conflicts. There's an image of a Remembrance Sunday service in Wheat Hampstead with a large crowd gathered outside the church. St Albans will honour the nation's war dead at a remembrance service and parade on Sunday, November the 10th. The parade will begin just after 10:30 a.m. from outside the former BHS store and proceed to the war memorial near St Peter's Church. A service led by Reverend Canon Mark Dernley will begin at 10:50 a.m. That's 10 to 11. On Monday, November 11th, at 11 a.m., the mayor will be at the war memorial to mark the 2 minute silence. The Harpenden Remembrance Day parade on Sunday will meet at 10:15 in Leighton Road and then head to the war memorial for a service of remembrance at 10:50 a.m. That's 10 to 11. When the service finishes at 11:30 a.m, the parade will reform for the mayor's address. Wheat Hampstead Parish Council and St Helen's Church are inviting residents to join the procession from Church Street by the entrance to Bury Green on Sunday, November 10th at 10:45 a.m, gathering at the War Memorial for a 2 minute silence at 11 a.m. Reverend Richard Banham will hold a short service outside, followed by a service within the church. Redbourne will also be remembering on November 10th at their civic service of remembrance at 9:30 a.m. at St Mary's Church. There will then be a commemorative act at the War Memorial from 10:50 to 11:15 a.m. with refreshments at Christchurch on Fish Street. Radlett will hold its remembrance parade on Sunday, where the church congregation and schools will be marching from Christchurch, Watling Street, to Radlett War Memorial at 10:15 a.m. Later, at 10:45, there will be a multi-faith act of remembrance at Radlett War Memorial. Representatives from Air, Sea and Army cadets, the Guiding and Scout movements, the police and other uniformed services will attend. Everyone is welcome to attend to pay their respects to members of the armed forces who lost their lives in two world wars and other conflicts. They will be joined by counsellors and leaders of the main faiths.
Nomination for Brain Injury Charity Volunteer. A St Albans woman has been shortlisted for a national award following her tireless efforts to help improve the lives of brain injury survivors in the local community. Leslie Maguire, 72, will be recognised at the annual awards ceremony organised by Headway, the Brain Injury Association, for dedicating the past 9 years of her life to caring for a brain-injured son and volunteering at a local charity. Leslie is one of three people from across the UK to be named a finalist for the Stephen McAleese Outstanding Contribution to Headway Award. After Leslie's son sustained traumatic brain injury in 2010, she became his full-time carer and later went on to volunteer at the charity which supported him throughout his recovery. It was her dedication to her son and tireless efforts as a charity volunteer that earned her the national nomination. Keith Maguire, who was just 38 at the time, was involved in a motorcycle accident while living in Thailand in 2008. His mum, Leslie, wasn't given much information about what had happened, but she was told that he was making a meaningful recovery. But 2 years later, Keith had returned to his home in St Albans when he had a violent seizure. Leslie found him on the kitchen floor, surrounded by a pool of blood. Paramedics spent numerous hours stabilising his condition before he underwent emergency surgery. He had sustained a fractured skull and frontal lobe injuries to his brain. Doctors believe that the seizure was linked to Keith's prior injury. He once again made a meaningful recovery, but began to experience difficulties with memory, fatigue, and behavioural challenges. Leslie said that caring for him during this time was challenging. I faced some really difficult times as a carer. I fell into a depressive state and I felt like I was going round in circles at times. Because brain injury is a hidden disability, people don't understand what you're going through. There's hardly any understanding about its effects. So it can be difficult to find help for both the survivor and their family. In the early days of Keith's recovery, he was able to access support from brain injury charity Headway Hertfordshire. He said, "Before I attended my first session at Headway, I thought to myself, why am I going? What can they do for me when they don't understand what I've been through? Back in those days, I was extremely negative, but then after looking around and seeing others going through similar experiences, the penny dropped. I changed my opinion, and I knew I was in a place where people could truly help me." But Headway Hertfordshire didn't just support Keith. The group's carer education sessions helped Leslie to come to terms with the effects of her son's injury. Keith said, "I know that Mum found the information on understanding the brain very useful. It was nice for her to meet other carers and share experiences with them. It made me feel happier too, knowing that she had people to talk to." Keith passed away earlier this year after a battle with cancer, but his legacy has lived on through Leslie and her determination to support others with a brain injury. She now runs a number of the charity's peer support groups. "We're like a little family at Headway Hertfordshire. It's great to be able to speak to others who understand your struggles. If I just stayed at home, I know that I'd feel worse about my situation. But volunteering at has given my life purpose. I don't know what I would do without it." Leslie was nominated for the award by John Archer, Chief Executive of Headway Hertfordshire. He said, "She's a one in a million volunteer and any charity will be lucky to have her. She displays such tenacity and has a positive reputation across the Headway network. Leslie takes pride in everything she does and has an enormous heart. Keith had a very complex and difficult recovery pathway, but Leslie was always there, providing support and encouragement even in the darkest of times. Leslie will find out if she's won on Friday, December the 6th, at the awards luncheon at the Intercontinental London Park Lane, Mayfair.
Now let's turn to some of the radio programmes that will be broadcast during the coming week that you might like to listen to. Starting with Saturday, November the 9th, when the afternoon drama on Radio 4 is Nora Webster, a dramatisation of Colm Tóibín's 2014 novel set in Ireland in the late 1960s. It tells the story of 40-year-old Norma Webster, who is grieving for her husband. As a single parent with four children, she finds it difficult to connect with her sons, and she struggles to come to terms with her changed situation. This Saturday afternoon, starting at 2:30, you can hear episode 1 of 2. Later on, at 8 o'clock on Radio 4's Archive on 4, marks the 30th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall, with a programme called Build the Wall. Today, that phrase is Trump's rallying cry to build the barrier that, he says, will control immigration from across the US border with Mexico. 30 years ago, the collapse of the Berlin Wall allowed people to believe in a new dawn for the peace movement. But since then, many other walls have been built alongside Trump's. In this programme, Katie Long, a specialist in immigration borders and identity, examines the modern history of border walls, looking at other examples in Northern Ireland and Israel, and asks whether the need for concrete barriers is still about the fear of them and us. Archive on 4 always uses the past to view the present in a new light, and it's worth a listen on Saturday at 8 o'clock on Radio 4. Over on Radio 2 at the same time, 8 o'clock, you can listen to the Festival of Remembrance from the Royal Albert Hall in London. Of course, this festival comes in the year we have marked the 75th anniversary of D-Day. Tonight, Paddy O'Connell provides the commentary on the highlights, which include a special tribute to those who took part in the Battle of Kohima, fought in India in 1944. From that battle comes the well-known epitaph: "When you go home, tell them of us and say, for your tomorrow we gave out today." The Festival of Remembrance starts on Radio 2 at 8 o'clock on Saturday.
That Festival of Remembrance is followed on Sunday, November the 10th, by the Ceremony of Remembrance from the Cenotaph, and there will be live coverage on Radio 4 from 10:30 on Sunday morning. Eleanor Oldroyd will be setting the scene as veterans, dignitaries and royalty gather to lay wreaths and pay their respects to those killed in recent conflicts throughout the world. Earlier in the morning, Sunday worship will come from Coventry and Berlin, two cities seriously affected by war and its aftermath. The service will focus on reconciliation, and it will be led from Coventry Cathedral by the Dean, the Very Reverend John Whitcomb, with contributions from Christians in Berlin as they mark the 30th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall. Sunday worship starts on Radio 4 at 8:10. Over on Radio 3 at noon, Private Passions welcomes the film and TV director Ken Loach, whose latest movie, Sorry We Missed You, captures the impact of the gig economy on families. Ken Loach will reflect on his life's work, and his musical choices include a 1968 recording of Dvorak's Cello Concerto that brings back memories for him of making the film Kez, which is really his signature work. Back on Radio 4, starting at 12:30, the food programme is celebrating its 40th birthday, with the first of two special programmes recorded in front of an audience at BBC Radio Theatre. Andy Oliver will chair a discussion with Rick Stein, Grace Dent, Leila Kazim, Yotam Ottolenghi and the long-time presenter of the food programme, Sheila Dillon. They'll be looking back at the role and status of food 40 years ago, when the programme was first commissioned as a six-week series. At the end of that six-week run, the powers that be questioned whether there was anything more to say about food. 40 years on, and there's still plenty to say. Another listening gem for Sunday is the start of the Palaces, the afternoon drama on Radio 4 starting at 3 p.m. Mike Harris has reworked for radio Anthony Trollope's novels, which were written between 1864 and 1879, reflecting high life and low politics in Victorian England. The star of the show is 19-year-old Lady Glencora Palliser, played in this series by Jessica Raine. She's married to the much older Plantagenet Palliser, a conscientious politician. Life should be good, but Lady Glencora is in love with someone else. On Sunday, you can hear the first of three episodes of The Palaces on Radio 4 at 3 p.m.
On now to some of the programmes that are broadcast throughout the week from Monday to Friday at the same time each day. The Book of the Week at 9:45 in the morning and repeated at 12:30 is The Anarchy, William Dalrymple's own adaptation of his book about the East India Company. It's a story with humble origins that lead to bold enterprise as circumstances conspire against India's explorers. Alistair McGowan reads from The Anarchy each day this week. The drama at 10:45 and repeated at 7:45 in the evening sees the return of D for Dexter. Developed in close collaboration with BBC Children in Need, Amanda Whittington's award-winning and heartbreaking drama is set in Lincolnshire and tells the story of teenager Skye, who cares for her little brother Dexter and her mother. Composer of the Week on Radio 3 features the life and work of Malcolm Arnold. A prolific and popular composer who died in 2006, Malcolm Arnold wrote 9 symphonies, more than 20 concertos, chamber music and music for brass bands, as well as over 120 film scores, including the music for The Bridge Over the River Kwai. He composed for Julian Lloyd Webber, Benny Goodman, and Julian Bream, among others, but his personal life was marred by addiction and depression. Donald MacLeod looks at the many contrasting sides of the character of Malcolm Arnold and plays some of his music from Monday to Friday from noon on Radio 3. After The World at One each day, the comedian and classicist John Harvey poses the question, could an ancient Athenian fix Britain? In this series, he explores our modern British democracy through the lens of ancient Athens, said to be the cradle of democracy. The first programme is titled Know Thyself and starts on Radio 4 each day at 1:45.
Other radio highlights this week include on Tuesday, November the 12th at 6:30 p.m. on Radio 4, the return of Tom Brigglesworth's Hang-Ups. If you haven't sampled it yet, this is a very funny series based on phone calls that son Tom Brigglesworth makes to his mum, dad and grandma. It's usually mayhem and plain speaking in the Brigglesworth household, which makes for much entertainment. This week, Tom seeks some medical advice while mum fights the good fight on behalf of Sheffield's trees. Fans of country music will want to tune in to Radio 2 from 2 p.m. on Wednesday, November the 13th, for a special live broadcast from Nashville ahead of the 53rd Annual Country Music Association's awards. Patrick Keelty will be there talking to established stars and up-and-coming names such as Joshua Headley. The Susurration of Trees. What a wonderful title for a programme. Producer Julian May and writer and presenter Bob Gilbert have long been fascinated by the sounds made by the rustle of leaves in the breeze and the names that have been coined for the noise of each species. So here they capture a selection, including quivering poplars, whispering elms and hissing ashes, along with the response of writers such as Thomas Hardy to the sounds and the music that the susurrations of trees have inspired. This is surely a radio treat not to be missed. The Susurrations of Trees is on Radio 4 on Thursday, November the 14th at 11:30 a.m. Lastly, Radio 3 goes jazz crazy on Friday, November the 15th. From 7:30 in the evening, Radio 3 brings you the opening gala concert of the London Jazz Festival from the Royal Festival Hall, and star performances include Corinne Bailey-Rae and Matthew Whittaker. Then J to Z takes over at 11 p.m. with more from the festival, as a final burst of jazz again from 1 a.m. when instead of classical music through the wee small hours, you can enjoy jazz with Al Ryan as he presents a marathon of programmes through to the morning. Jazz fans, take note so that you can stay awake or listen again on BBC Sounds.
You are now at the end of this recording. So from Joan, Claire, Roy and Michael, and from Alex, who recorded and edited this edition, and Jill, who chose the radio selections, goodbye, and here's to the next time.